Well, hello, everyone, and thanks for coming. I just want to say that I have tried to upload various outreach material that we've created, and I haven't been having much luck, but I will continue to try and do that so that you can, maybe we'll be able to access it in weeks to come. I do have some outreach material out in the back. It was a mailer that we ended up putting together, and we ended up mailing it to all the rural route numbers throughout the San Luis Valley, which I want you to take a look at quickly. It's a very, very beautiful place. The valley floor, which is at the lowest point, is at 7,500 feet above sea level. The mountains that you see, like the one there, Mount Blanc, is at 14,000 feet. And so basically, it's a community of interest that is surrounded by mountains. And there are four passes. Basically, there were four ways historically to get into the valley. And or you would travel up the Rio Grande, and we are at the headwaters of the Rio Grande there. So we cover an area that is 122 feet, miles long, and 70 miles wide. Basically, to give you an idea, it's about the size of the state of Connecticut. So and there are about 50,000 people that live there. So it's a very remote place, and obviously there is a lot of agriculture that goes on there, and there's high capacity wells there, center pivot irrigation, and in fact, in the neighborhood of about 7,000 high capacity wells. So there's an enormous amount of produce that gets trucked out of the valley in the form of potatoes, it being the second largest potato grower in the country. And I'd like to say table potatoes. So in other words, our potatoes don't get cut up into French fries. They're literally the potatoes that you serve to your family that come in those, 10, 15-pound bags. Most of those come from the valley. They actually estimate that a lot of vitality, there's a lot of vitality in the vegetables that are produced there. So that being said, I'm obviously very proud of the valley. Just to give you an idea of where it is, it's in south central Colorado. So it's actually about 3.5 hours from here, 4-hour drive. I highly recommend if you ever want to come someplace and just have a wonderful time with your family, this is a great place to come, especially if you like getting outside. There's a lot of places to recreate. It has some of the most concentrated wildlands left in the whole United States there surrounding this valley. So we still have actually mountain lion and bear and all kinds of things there. So I had the opportunity in 2006 to, and then just to give you another idea of the mountains here and the water systems that are in the valley, which are obviously the lifeblood to the area. As was mentioned, a lot of public lands around the valley, so there's a lot of opportunities to protect the valley through public process, because it just so happens coincidentally that pretty much all the public land is the mountains. So we have to work very hard on a regular basis to involve ourselves in public process, which is the National Environmental Policy Act. And so actually over the last 25 years, we have worked to develop community groups and working groups to get involved with NEPA to respond to NEPA and really have input into the process. And I can tell you that it does make a difference. I believe that public getting involved in process makes for much better decision making. And we're just seeing that over and over again. And unfortunately, there are times where we've had to file lawsuits, and we've won every one, and we're very selective about it because we only want to get involved with those where we feel like public process has been denied, and we feel like the public needs to be involved so that a better solution can come. We've been involved in a variety of issues. Some of these are large-scale developments, travel management planning, where does off-road vehicles go on public lands, gas and oil development, renewable energy development, and we also work a lot on planning, management planning. How do we build these public land agencies to develop management plan over the next 20 years that really protect the environment? So these are the issues that we've been involved with. So when I met Tammy Thomas Burton, who's actually sitting back there, in 2005, she came to the San Luis Valley because the EPA was doing some studies, and they discovered that over a third of the population relied on household wells. And we all know that household wells aren't regulated by any agency, so if people weren't protecting their own wells, then that meant that there was no one really providing or no opportunity to provide opportunity for people to be able to assess what was going on with the water that they were drinking. So we ended up developing a project called SLV Leap High, and that's a way of saying the San Luis Valley Landscape Environmental Assessment Plan, health-inspired goals for humans. Not like anybody needs to memorize that, but one of the reasons we did that is because environmental organizations have to focus on a landscape level all the time. We're literally dealing with large tracts of land and watersheds and trying to assess what's going on and how we can protect these large pieces of territory. So we wanted to keep that in mind, even though we were focusing on a very personal project, like someone's household well. So Tammy was able to work with EPA and bring the mobile lab down, and we had about 2 weeks to get everybody involved with this project in terms of the communication, getting it, doing the outreach. But the outreach was, the response was profound. About 417 households ended up responding to get free household well testing. People did their own testing, which was really, really important, because we realized that this is really, more than anything else, an empowerment process, because people love going out and being their own scientist and kind of, you know, doing their own measuring and things like that. And there was an education forum that took place, so people had to come to a public meeting. They were told how to go about collecting their water, and then they were all given kits, and then they all had to meet at a certain place at a certain time to deliver their kits, and then they were sent the results. So people were, there was a lot of buy-in. I mean, people were really, really curious about this. And as a result, and I want to say that Tammy, before she and I had talked, we had met with, she had met with the water users in the valley, the agricultural water users, and they were very suspicious of why she was there. And so it was great to be able to finally focus on household wells, which was never done before. They did a lot of testing on agricultural wells through the years, but never on private households. So the results, over a quarter of those 417 households that were tested came back positive for bacteria. So we knew that there wasn't a whole lot of well maintenance going on. And so that became a huge part of the education process that followed. But we also had nitrate levels, 1.44% in some of the 192 wells that were tested. Arsenic, 12.5% came back positive. Lead, 1.4. Fluoride, 3.6. 3.1 for uranium. So we realized that we had some heavy metal issues that were going on, and it wasn't just in one concentrated place. We knew about the arsenic, but we realized that it was actually throughout the whole valley. It wasn't in just one particular place. We ended up receiving an Environmental Protection Award. These are some of the women that were involved with the project in 2007. And then we also received that year a community problem-solving CPS grant. So we were able to really develop capacity by receiving this grant. And this was over a three-year period, this $100,000 grant. But the good news is we were able to match this with other partners that ended up coming in and really helping us. And that came through private foundation funding. The counties ended up stepping up and helping I think probably one of our best partners was Colorado State University Cooperative Extension. We used to have an extension service in the San Luis Valley, but that ended probably about 5 or 6 years ago. So they really wanted to stay in touch with the Valley, but they really had no way to come in and be able to do the outreach that they had been doing. So basically, we were a great partner for them. And we were able to come in, and they actually helped us with a lot of the cost share of doing another series of water testing, a lot of the outreach and curriculum that we ended up using. We ended up giving everybody that came a DVD that they could take home, and this was shared by all the extension services. They had spent a lot of time putting this together, so it was Montana State University was involved with this. I mean, a lot of different universities were involved in developing this curriculum to hand out to people so they could maintain their wells better. And so, you know, everyone had a DVD, and so they just could put that in if they didn't quite understand what was happening at the presentations, and they could have this step-by-step process of how to not just collect water, but how to maintain their well and how to do a lot of other things. These are all the partners that were involved in the project. I'd say for the most part, we worked together pretty well. These are the points that were tested. And as you can see, we were able to do it and map it and get it on GIS points. And obviously, since we've done this, a lot of other people are interested in this information. Obviously, this is where we started seeing the arsenic issue. 12 wells ended up being above the EPA MCL levels. But we also have other issues. We have sodium issues, iron, nitrate, we know has been an issue for quite a while. We were able to take this information, call people back, go over their test results with them. One of the ladies that's head of the Sangre de Cristo lab has this incredible story about, people coming in and not feeling well and then finding out that they have, you know, either snakes or rodents that end up dropping into their wells. Because these species are looking for water and they see cracks in the system and so they just go for it. And unfortunately, people are drinking this water and don't realize it. So there was a huge education opportunity to really let people know how important it was to maintain this. So we went through treatment options and I'd say for the most part we've gotten really positive results in terms of just the whole maintenance process, how to do it, and we went through this on a very detailed level and people had a lot of personal conversations so they were able to really get an idea about what to do. The purpose for this grant was to document behavior change, and we were able to show that because we did follow-up phone calls and we talked to everybody that participated and absolutely got positive results around people changing their behavior about maintaining their wells. They're starting files, changing their physical area, filtering systems, shock chlorinating their system, and some people unfortunately had to switch to bottled water. But we were able to develop a lot of structure on the public health departments, which is the really great part of this story. Because in 2008 in Colorado, the Public Health Act basically is encouraging the development of environmental health departments within the public health departments. And in rural Colorado, they just don't exist. So this project brought in all the public health nurses to be able to really participate going forward. And so now we're a partnership. And this is the institutional structure that needs to be created so that this project is going to continue, even though we are obviously going to be funded for only a certain period of time. We know that these agencies are going to be involved in these projects in the future. Thanks.
Thank you very much.